Go to some basic definitions here before we get into anything else. First definition is a break. The break is right next door to this wall that we set up, and you get to go, and Chuck lets you go. It should be around 10:15, 10:30, somewhere in that time frame. We want you back in here promptly 15 minutes after we let you go. Then at 12 o'clock, we break, we sprung for it. They charged us for this, but we decided to spring for the lunch for all of you. And it's in rooms 304 and 305 at 12 o'clock. We'll have to be on time for that, so we'll tell you some all day. And we would like you back here promptly at 1 o'clock, if you don't mind, because Tony is coming on at that time. And and he has a tight schedule today, and so we'd really appreciate it if you're in place, and it would be a highlight for you, like Tony, to listen to what he's got to say. He's a terrific speaker. And we'll go probably up till 4:30 or when we all get tired, and I'll explain what's going to happen here in just a second. Let's go through some definitions here, though, to begin with, just to get things warmed up a little bit. Firstly, I have been on programs. I shared a platform with Chris Deedy once at an Enron conference, in which he made a big deal between the difference between distributed education and distance education. I don't think that distinction holds or is useful anymore. It used to be that distance education was pipe television, like Maine used to be so big that way. And distributed education was the internet. But anymore, the internet is becoming the medium of doing this. And so, hey, Rockus is here, everybody. The envelope's right in the back there, okay? Pick them up whenever. And there are seats up front if you get a bad view or if you don't get handouts or something. By the way, the handouts, at least mine anyway, I may get to in the wrap-up session. Don't worry about it. There's nothing we'll be referring to this morning at all. So just set it aside for now. Anyway, we make no distinction between distance and distributed education. I was at a conference in Munich in April, and a professor from Scotland, appropriately, Edinburgh, made a big deal about McLearn universities. I'm going to kind of define those as being the same thing, McLearn. Meaning kind of the analogy is the fast food, easy access, kind of knowing what the quality is and a bunch of other things that kind of relate. The analogy breaks down at some point. I'm just going to treat those all as the same thing today. But what I do think is extremely important is to make a distinction between asynchronous and synchronous. Let's start with synchronous first of all. Synchronous is pretty well like it describes, it's like it's happening right now. This is synchronous because whatever I'm saying is coming to all of you at the same time. And basically it's what happens when we have a live class. And the live class can either be a virtual, it could be around the world, or it can be a live classroom that's really what we call the traditional classroom. The advantage of the virtual ones, of course, is you can get instant replays. You can record the virtual classroom experiences and so on. The live classrooms, I guess there is a instant replay of sorts, but this isn't quite the same thing, just taping it like this. An example of a synchronous situation. Those of you, how many were in organize this show? How many were here last year or in the show? Hey, I got some repeat customers. I appreciate that. In San Diego last year, in the Marriott Hotel, one of the featured speakers was Sharon Leifer. And Sharon, bless her heart, she actually organized an international accounting course at San Diego State University using a lot of her own funding, without a grant, without corporate support, and actually organized four universities worldwide. A university in Switzerland, a university in Spain, a university in San Diego State, and then one in Hong Kong. She had a couple others, and then they worked at one tour in Spain. They kind of collapsed into one. But the four universities, and these Each university has 5 registered students, plus each university has a professor of those students, Swiss professor, Spanish professor, Hong Kong professor, and so on. Then she also has a leading practitioner that attends this class, and a leading standard setter. So in total, each campus is putting, of course, that makes what? 8 people? About 32 people all meet at the same time. Now, what does that entail time-wise? That means Mike Porter from the FASB has to beat this class at 2:30 in the morning. It means that Sharon's students go to class at 11 o'clock at night. She says the San Diego State Department's ready for that. Anyway, the point is, they actually meet in a classroom, even though the Swiss students are in Switzerland, the Spanish students are in Spain, and Hong Kong students are over in Hong Kong. They meet at the same time, they see each other, they hear each other, and they conduct a somewhat regular class. They, and to illustrate this, she in a hotel in San Diego, 56K modem, she plugged in, she had the students in Switzerland come on, we saw them, we heard them, and it only could get better when she's at campus and on a T1 line as opposed to 56K. So you hold class. And so being online is, doesn't mean you can't have synchronized classrooms. And many of these programs do this. Now the asynchronous, when you move up to there, basically, by the way, every synchronized class has asynchronous moments. I mean, you have a class, but your students go home and study from the textbook. When they're studying from the textbook, it's asynchronous. So everything's got asynchronous parts to it. But when we talk about asynchronous learning courses, we're talking about courses where there is no live classroom, either virtually or in reality. The students do not meet in a regular class. Now, there's still, and it's still an ambiguous term, however, because even if they don't meet in a regular class, and I'll give you an example here. I'm going to introduce these folks in a minute and tell you a little more about it. But at the University of Illinois, there's a course, it's intermediate microeconomics, taught by Lanny Arden. And they run 2 sections of this course. One section he teaches in a traditional manner, synchronous, the students meet face-to-face and does the same thing he's always been for years. The other course, the students are full-time students of Illinois, but this class never meets. But yet, they have what I would call a uniform pace, in that they have weekly assignments. The students can chat in their chat rooms about those assignments, and the instructor can kind of stay right on pace with them each week to week. And so this is what I would call an asynchronous network class, but with a uniform pace. And the students go on a regular semester, okay, which is 15 weeks, let's say, and so for the course. Okay? Now, if it's really a discretionary thing, it doesn't work like that. The students might take a semester's course in 4 weeks if they just work full time at it. The students might take a semester's course in 40 weeks if they just sneak it in now and then. If it's truly discretionary. Now, truly discretionary asynchronous course is very hard to manage. First of all, you don't have any other students that are at the same pace you are, and so it's very hard to have communications with other students. And secondly, the instructors have a terrible time. Imagine having 30 students all at different stages in your course. It takes kind of a... And so what amounts to is if you go to the discretionary mode, the course becomes more and more automatic. So automatic testing, automatic grading, and the students have to be more self-reliant. But when we talk about asynchronous learning networks, we're mostly going to be talking about the uniform pace time. Many of the asynchronous courses still meet a little bit at time to time. A good example is the Gemba program at Duke, where they meet in 13 weeks or something like that in different parts of the world. So anyway, that covers that part of it. Let's go on down here now to the introduce the speakers a little bit. I'm not going through formal introductions because it's just going to take too much time, but I'll just tell you who's here and what they're going to do a little bit. I'm Bob Jensen from Trinity University. I organize this seminar every year and with different speakers. And this year, I think we've got really highlighted. We've got one of probably the most outstanding show I hope that I've put together. Mike Kirschenheider. Mike, you want to stand up? along with your partner, Steve Orport. Mike is from Columbia University. His background is, well, I don't go through all backgrounds. You guys can do that when you're up here, and I think you should. You should probably tell them a little bit about yourselves, but I just won't take time right now. And Steve was teaching at the University of Chicago. Now he's with UNEX Corporation. And so, and Steve was surprised in this. Mike brought him along. And I think it's very pleasant that we've got a real live-talking employee of UNEX that's right in the action to talk to you about this today. And they will come on after our break and really talk about the UNEX operations. Mike is more involved in developing the course for it, and Steve is more involved in the actual UNEX whole operation, and we'll explain it. Dan Stone is not here yet. He called me last night. He tried all day long yesterday. By the way, he just moved. He's been at the University of Illinois for years. He just got an endowed chair at the University of Kentucky and just moved, and he was stuck in the Lexington Airport all day long with weather this year. They kept canceling his flights. So he was hopefully on a plane right now, and he should be here before lunch. And he'll be coming on this afternoon. And with an outstanding show, he actually, I assigned this to him, and I'm glad he did this. He went to the lead players. The most extensive experiments in asynchronous learning have been the Sloan Foundation-funded experiments at various campuses. And among those, Illinois is the most extensive. They funded 30 courses to be taught with double-blind kind of things, and so you can compare the synchronous and the asynchronous versions of this. And Dan is going to tell us about the impacts on communication among students, communication with staff, and the performance of the students in this, and the teaching evaluations of the students from the various things, and so on. And I've seen his slides, and the slides are outstanding. Tony Katnack. Tony, where'd you go? Is he still here, or did he have to slip up? He had to leave. Okay. Tony, he has a reason to leave, by the way. He's running a conference across the street. Tony has been involved actively for years in the KPMG Minority Doctoral Program, the KPMG Foundation, funding the minority doctoral students. And he's in charge this year. And so he's running back and forth between going to come over here for the 1 o'clock thing that he does, and he'll have to go back over there because, like I say, he's running this thing. Anyway, Tony was involved in what I call the most successful accounting education change project. It won the American Accounting Association Innovation Award back in about 97, 98. And it also earned Tony the American Accounting Association's Pew Foundation Scholar Award, and also that involved an activity where they go out in California and meet with other Pew scholars and so on. And so this has been a very recognized program. Basically, the idea of the program is to pull all the lectures out of intermediate accounting. They don't lecture in 2 semesters of intermediate accounting anymore. The students treat this more like they would in real life. You've got a problem to solve, you can solve it any way you can, but you're on your own kind of thing. And the program, I think, has been an amazing success. In fact, I sat back there and I was so amazed at the results of this. It inspired me to go out and ask why. So I talked to a bunch of learning theorist people, and I really boiled down, I really think that a lot of it entails metacognition, the way our brains work. Metacognitive processes work differently than cognitive processes. And if you wrap up today, I might be able to have time to talk about that a little bit, but I don't know if I'll get to it or not. We'll see. I can refer you to the paper where I talk about it. It's on the way. And last but certainly not least, our next presenter will be Chuck Hickman. Chuck was a senior executive with the AACSB. It's no longer called AACSB. They changed their name. I think the American Accounting Association should change its name accordingly, because they want to have it recognized that it's more international organization, as is the American Accounting Association. So they have changed it, but they still have AACSB and a lot of their stuff, because nobody knows about anything else but AACSB. What is their actual name now?
International Association for Management Education.
Otherwise known as the AACSB. Anyway, he left there about a year ago, was it?
Last November.
And he is now the academic vice president of what was for a while University Access. I like that name. They have had a name change. They're now CUSIC. I don't know if I spelled it right there. But
Close,
yeah. I got it spelled more correctly later on. I just did this in a hurry this morning. He'll tell you why the name changed and what they're about and so on. With that, I think I am going to move on to get the stage set for these guys. Let's first of all talk about types of and mostly profitable prestige partners. This basically means partnerings with prestige universities, Ivy League type universities. And when I say mostly profitable there, I mean mostly profitable to the universities. The corporations that are partnering with them still may be trying to get to where they're making money on it, but certainly it's been profitable to the universities. And let's talk first thing here about the minimal case. The minimal case is where the corporations really don't provide much, but in some cases they provide students, and in some cases they provide student funding. An example would be where you've got a company like, say, Intel, and Intel decides that they want their an employee to get a Master's of Engineering degree online from Stanford University. And so what Intel will do is pay whatever Stanford charges in the way of tuition for the online course. The universities provide general programs. By general, I mean that the people coming in can come from the general population, from different companies and so on, and not just one company. Course management means that the university is responsible for the whole administration of the course. The materials, the communications of the instructors and students, the testing and the grading and so on. Universities they've not given up that in this case. Course funding, they usually are accredited programs because they come from accredited universities. And the reason I say this before is full logo, which means that even though the course is online, or the degree program is online, your transcript says Stanford University, or your transcript says Duke University, or North Carolina, or whatever. I would say that the attitude in the early days of the internet was, of the Ivy League schools and the elite schools, was one of, what's the best way to turn on? Snobbery? There's another term I could probably pick out here. Basically, they thought, the University of Phoenix can do this. By the way, the University of Phoenix started out with this and became the world's largest private university. No private university has over 60,000 students. On the other hand, the University of Phoenix wasn't accredited. It wasn't very much recognized in the academic world. And so it didn't shake up anybody. The University of Phoenix was growing by leaps and bounds. But the thing that shook up the whole thing was Stanford and the early on ADEPT program, which stands for Asynchronous Distance Education Project. That's what ADEPT stands for. And what it is, the ADEPT program, is a Master's of Engineering from one of the world's leading engineering schools. Even though it is my alma mater, I have to say, MIT and Stanford have two of the best engineering programs in the world. And they also introduced more than just the Master of Engineering program. They also introduced a whole lot of training programs in engineering and in computer science, certificate type programs and so on. Now, just the fact that Stanford's doing this kind of caught the attention of Harvard and Yale and all this. But what really caught their attention is the money involved. Stanford now gets, we talked about it at dinner last night, Mike, that was you, went throughout, they get over $100 million on it, right? They gross $100 million from these online programs. Now you can kind of see what's going to happen here. Think about markets. $100 million today, and it's been growing by leaps and bounds. And think about the resident students at Stanford. The tuition revenue on that is going to be relatively flat, right? Because you're only going to have so many coming to campus all the time. So where's your growth going to be?
Shoot.
In the online program. So that part is going to keep on growing. The traditional stuff that they do is going to stay relatively flat, and pretty soon the revenue you get down here is going to pale in comparison to this. Well, prestige schools, it caught their attention. When a Stanford University does this, and some others then started getting in the game. The first one in business that really was noteworthy was the Duke Gamma program. Duke's kind of dropped that name now, by the way. It's called the Global Executive Program, and for an MBA. And it is an online program. Let's look at the parameters of it just a little bit. My computer, I never can get over that with this laptop. Let's just show, it's mostly asynchronous, but just to give you an idea of what they have, the cost right now is about $100,000, okay? And that doesn't include room and board, of course. And because these folks stay live at home, they don't come to Duke. It's a 19-month academic program. There are 5 modules with 3 courses per module. There are 50 weeks of internet-mediated learning, okay? Now, this program is different than the Stanford program. This program, the internet-mediated learning, is pretty much synchronous. These students, they're all in their homes worldwide, France and, Japan and all over the world. But they get together at the same time, and they have a class, and it's typically a case-oriented class. This is what appealed to the Duke faculty, because the Duke faculty didn't have to change the way they normally taught cases too much, kind of thing. So you got 50 weeks of that. Now, they do have 11 weeks of residential education, and they meet in 4 different continents, let's say around numbers 2.5 weeks in each place, London maybe, and maybe over in Hong Kong, New York City. They usually meet in great financial centers for a couple of weeks face-to-face, but these folks are pretty intimate by then because they have been communicating in class, in cases, they have team projects, and so they're getting much like you would get with a campus education. The program has had great evaluations from the participants, and companies are basically paying for this $100,000, and so it's aimed mostly at executives. And going back now, let's get this. Going back now, so you got 2 of them here that I would say fit into this general thing where the companies are mostly just providing the students and the funding. Now let's go down a little bit further. This is going to be similar, except the companies begin to play a little more significant role, and the universities change. First of all, this is a case where you now have a dedicated program. At a university, and they aren't always just online, and some of these are on site as well, but the universities have dedicated a program. In some cases, it even has a different calendar. Typical 15-week semester, and just for a particular company. One thing is, it's not a training program, it's a full education program, mostly in this case I've illustrated with master's degrees, and the corporations begin to do a little bit more. For example, since they have to be full-time employees to get in there, the corporations play a heavier role on admissions. I think what really happens in these cases is the schools have kind of set some minimums or GMATs and whatever, or standards, and then the companies deal with that. And I think, even though the universities probably wouldn't like to admit this, I think they pretty much take who the companies send to them for this program. And the corporations will also, some of these are insurance program services, so the accounting firms wanted to provide them with case materials on insurance services and so on, because they figured that the faculty really isn't as up to date on assurance services as the firms. So, and then we'll provide videos, there'll be some knowledge bases, and of course their full logo will appear as ENY or PwC or so on. Dedicated program, course management, course funding. And what you're getting in both the 1 and 2 above here is these are coming from accredited schools. And your diploma is going to carry their full logo. A good example of this is the ENY thing. Started out with 50 students at each campus, Notre Dame and University of Virginia. It's now up to 100 students. Here would be the Notre Dame one. Here would be the Notre Dame one. And they call it the Your Career and Advisory, Assurance and Advisory Business Services. It's not quite the same as a master's accounting degree, but they have tried like crazy to try to get it so that you'll be able to sit for the CPA exam in most states. You won't in Texas because our state requires so much accounting, but most of the states you'll be able to with just what you get in this program. It's kind of a wonder course. The first 10 weeks in the summer, you kind of get the first year and a half of accounting that you learn, or 2 years of accounting that you get in an undergraduate program. And so that's asking a lot in 10 weeks. But and the students tend to be mostly out of finance or non-business. Now, they do allow some accounting majors into this program if they meet minority status. And I thought there would be a snowball's chance in hell that if the Trinity students would get in this program. But out of a class of 19, we have a very small undergraduate class in Trinity in the county. Two of them are part of this program. I guess you'd have to say minority status. One is from India, but the, they're doing that. The other campus that they're doing this on is the University of Virginia. I won't bring it up, but it's the same kind of program. The programs aren't too different, and so on. I didn't put it in here, but there also, I should have, there's also a PwC now has a similar program on three different campuses. They picked Illinois, Texas, and USC, California. And they're dedicated programs, just their employees, and these are Masters of Accounting degrees. I just got an email from Rashad. He's leaving the University of Florida, he's going to Illinois, and he'll be teaching the PwC accounting classes, or some of them anyway, at Illinois. Now I think in this case, I'm told, only one campus is reserved for former accounting majors. The other two campuses are supposed to be for non-accounting majors. And they're going to be, again, a little more assurance services oriented as opposed to a straight master's degree. But again, probably trying to also get you set for CPA exam. Now there is a different kind of program over here. The PwC partnered with Georgia. Oh yeah, I put it over here, PwC. But the Georgia program is different than Illinois, Texas, and USC. Illinois, Texas, and USC are really accounting programs or assurance services programs. The one in Georgia is not. It has very little to do with accounting. That is a straight MBA program. And it's also a little different here. Let's talk about that a little bit. I've already told you that the Gemba program is pretty much online, but it's synchronous classes. The DEC program is pretty much asynchronous with heavy video. Chuck is going to tell you more about how expensive video is to produce. But engineering is particularly conducive to video learning because you're dealing with a lot of things. And you can visualize things video-wise. Video is not quite as important to business education. Other things are more important than we do, cases and so on. And so video isn't quite as important as it is in the engineering thing. But it's important to keep that in mind. This is asynchronous, this is synchronous. The Notre Dame and the UVA programs are mixed, but they're mostly synchronous. With just a couple courses while the students are back home working. But when it's synchronous, they actually come physically to the campus for two summers. And then they go away during tax season, and then they still take a course asynchronously. But those are pretty much, they take a course over the internet, but it's a synchronous course. The Georgia program here is totally asynchronous, but it has that schedule. Denny Beresford, for example, the former chair of the FASB, teaches in this program at Georgia. He brought me in to do a show, and I got to sit in on their briefings where they're talking about their program and so on with the faculty. And so on. It's an MBA degree, and it's aimed for PwC consulting employees who are engineers and who are computer scientists but did not have business. And so it's designed to give an MBA degree to those type of folks who have not had a business background. And it only has a little bit of accounting in the program. But it's different than the Notre Dame and so on ones because it is an asynchronous program. They still have weekly assignments, it runs on a regular semester, and they can chat with each other in chat lines and so on, but it's asynchronous. I guess that's about it. Now what we're gonna do is we're gonna take a giant leap. You notice that both of these, if I spell it right, both of these say that the universities manage the courses. When you go down to this next one, the green one, you're now in the land where the course management has now shifted to the corporation. Okay? The corporation over here is now going to be doing the course management. And that is a giant leap. Because the university has given up the communication with the student, the university has given up the grading, the testing, and so on, turned it over to the corporation. And that's where Steve's going to come on and tell you, UNX is training their instructors, and they're going to teach much in the same style that they would at the partnered universities, but it is different in that the corporations run the thing. Chuck says his organization hasn't gone quite that far yet. Where does the partnering come in then? Well, this is where Mike comes in. Mike is still involved, and by the way, I'm going to talk about the partners in a minute, because the partners with some of these are the prestige schools in business. Like Mike from Columbia, he was involved in the course design, developing cases, developing videos, developing knowledge bases, and I assume, in this case, are they going to get full logos on this? Is Columbia University going to appear on their degrees in any way?
I'm not sure exactly what the degree will look like. The Columbia logo appears on the course.
On the course, yeah.
As it does for University of Chicago, the LSE, whatever course, whoever it is.
Because it's your course, you just don't teach it. Is that a fair statement?
The course design and the course content is based on us.
Yeah.
So our logo goes on the course.
And I assume you also kind of consult with the instructors in terms of that course.
And I'll talk about that when I make the presentation about how there's quality considerations, ongoing quality considerations.
No, I'm not saying that. I'm just saying that it is still a quantum leap when the corporation does teach us.
Oh, yeah,
that's
a good question.
Okay. The examples for this are UNIX. Is probably the one that has got the most publicity on this, and it's partly due to their partnering due to the fact that they got accredited. And how do you get accredited overnight? How can you just go out as a corporation and become accredited overnight and give degrees that are qualified to be recognized by other universities for transfer credits and so on? How do you get it over there? You buy a university, right? So you next bought one. I've never heard of one, but it's called Cardian University, and if I clicked on that, I'd take you to their homepage and you could read about it, but I'm not going to take the time because I'm running out of time. But I do want to get down here where I mention one thing, and that is the focus on partnerships, because their partners are biggies. We got Mike here from Columbia, and there's Columbia. We got University of Chicago as a partner. Stanford University is a partner. Carnegie Mellon's a partner, and it should be here. London School of Economics is a partner, wherever it is. I'm not going to take time out. But you got five major partners. How did they get those schools to partner with them? Well, they can tell you more, but I think they bought them. And maybe they can tell you, Mom, but let's just throw out $1 million, of course. That's a nice round number, and then they'll correct me if I'm wrong, okay? But what they have really done here with the money they have, this was started by Mike Milton, but Steve told me last night that because of his felonious background, the university didn't quite want to sign on with him unless he got into more of an ongoing status. He'll talk about that too. But still, a lot of his money went into this. They had a lot of bucks. And so they went out and they bought the courses from these major schools, and they're buying, they've got a lot of instructors now, they're training instructors, and they're going to be a good operation. They bought a university, they've got accreditation, and I think more than anything else here, among all the things they bought the logo. Logos are going to be so important, because the real growth market is going to be the executive education of companies. What is important in companies is where you got your degree. And so they recognize this. Mike Milken was a Wharton graduate. He recognizes the importance of this kind of thing. And so they bought logos. Pennsera is similar to that. They're dealing with different universities. And their mission is still not very clear to me. Maybe Chuck can talk about that a little more than I can. But they've got Harvard, they've got Duke, and they've got others. And I was told Duke's going to offer a full MBA program with them. But when you go to their homepage, they talk about mostly their knowledge community and kind of working with the university presses. So Chuck, I'm going to let Chuck kind of tell you more about Pinzer. The UNEX and Pinzers and the Biggies, there are some others that fall into this class. They're still in this class of, well, maybe Pinzer is even misclassified because it's not clear who's going to teach the Duke University MBA program at this point. Is Duke going to handle all those students, or is Pinzer going to do like UNEX? I don't know the answer to that one, so I have to check on my classification. Now we have instructors, down here, where we have the courses being offered. Usually they're not complete degree programs, but the courses are being offered, and they're usually done through the auspices of some association. For example, one of our professors at Trinity, an archaeology professor, Mark teaches under a grant from the Associated Colleges of the South. And this is a distance course. Anybody in the world can take it, but it comes through ACS. I don't know how they're dealing with accreditation in this instance. Maybe Trinity's accreditation carries through to that court. I haven't asked that question. Now, as you go into this, by the way, here's where we're talking about now, where the companies or the associations are doing the instruction, the course management, this kind of thing. Presumably the ACS, if they're offering this course and Mark Garrison stops teaching it, they'll go out and find somebody else to teach it. In other words, it's not Trinity's responsibility to teach this course. It's the ACS. So course management is with the association. Now, in some cases, the corporation is really the university as well. Morningside Ventures is a good example at Columbia. Morningside Ventures is a wholly owned corporation of Columbia. Started out as a program to become a distance ed program for the core courses, an undergraduate core, the liberal arts kind of undergraduate core. It's since expanded, and I'll talk about that in a minute. You also have Harcourt University up here. That is now under its final stages of getting Northeastern accreditation, regional accreditation for full degree programs as a publishing company. They would kind of fall into the whole thing. Again, that whole point about we're in that whole realm where the company or the association is responsible for the course management and not the university. Now we also have university-owned corporations that have special programs, the course funding, and carry the full logos of the university. I put them again down here under Morningside Ventures, but we have this new thing called Fathom. I just learned a little bit about it last night, and I have to tell you more, but this is the most exciting thing to me. I'm going to refer to it in a little bit. This is where you are now going to really put up knowledge bases. For example, one of Fathom's partners is the Smithsonian, right? Where are some of the other partners? You just grab them all. Smithsonian?
I think it was the British Library.
British Library.
I think the London School of Economics before going to Columbia. Maybe Library, I'm not sure. I mean, the big database, the big library, the big institution.
And by the way,
Columbia, London School of Economics, British Library, New York Public Library, the Smithsonian, the Cambridge University Press, University of Chicago, American Film Institute, and RAND Incorporated.
So they're forming one humongous knowledge base. And presumably now you're going to be able to access knowledge as opposed to just courses and things of this nature. I think it's exciting. Where's Columbia getting the money to do this? Well, Mike tells me they have been making so much money on their other programs, online programs, that they're rolling money into these new kinds of ventures. Fathom, to me, is the most exciting thing I've heard about in a couple years, and I will come back to that in just a second. Let's go down now to, because I'm running out of time for my part of this, let's go down to corporations sign pacts with professors affiliated with prestige universities. Now we're getting to Chuck's area. He's going to come tell you about this. Here is where they have not signed formal contracts with universities per se. Universities are sort of out of it. And the corporations are providing course funding and resources, which are significant. I mean, Chuck's outfit is really spending money on videos and getting professors to write materials and so on. professors that they hire provide, they might provide students because in some cases if they aren't teaching, Chuck still depends on you using this material in your courses. So the universities are still providing the students. Professors that are authoring this provide things like cases, videos, and so on. They kind of go hand in hand. And he's kind of getting what I would call a proxy role up here. They haven't signed a contract for Columbia University or University of North Carolina, but look who they've got writing courses for them. Roman Wheel, loosely affiliated with Chicago yet. Mark Albion, retired from Harvard, but one of the lead horses at Harvard, and when you put his credentials down, he lists Emeritus Harvard or whatever. You've got some active people here, and maybe the Rockness or Howard can tell us about these. You've got J. Morgan Jones. I assume he's still active there, right? Howard?
Yeah.
And he's also authored a course for Chuck's Quizzic, or used to be called University Access. Robert Connolly, you pronounce that, at UNC, and R. Kip Martin of Chicago. Now, by proxy logo, I mean when those folks put their name on the course, they will list their affiliations, and so you're seeing that these are top professors from top schools. And I would click here, I don't have time, I could go to each of these places, but I just don't have time. The Concord Law School did something similar, and it got a lot of notoriety. They actually took one of the leading professors from the Harvard Law School and developed a whole bunch of videos, and then were promptly sued by the Harvard Law School, well actually the University of Harvard University as a whole, and kind of to set a precedent as to what is the limit to which you can develop, Mike. you're okay because you're contracted with your university. But what is the limit that these other folks over here are who are now with other universities, what is the limit to which they can sign on and become part of the a corporate operation like this. Anyway, his name is Arthur Miller, professor, and he was sued by Harvard. Harvard wanted to set a precedent that just said, we don't want this to get out of hand. We're Harvard professors, we do this all the time. The funny thing is, I don't think there would be any objection at all if those videos had been available from a publisher, available to anybody who wanted to adopt the book or something like this. It's the fact that he had an exclusive contract with one law school, other than Harvard, one is what got him in trouble here with this one. Like I said, if this was part of a publishing outfit, I don't think he would have. But anyway, that one. Then we also have this last thing we're going to talk about, I think, here. We have prestige universities partner with each other. And what happens here is, one of the big things you get out of a prestige MBA program, for example, is, apart from the education, is the network. Who you know, what's going on, and so on. So now what you have is you have these partnerings that are going on. University of California, Berkeley, with Michigan Business School, with the Darden School, University of Virginia. And they're going to actually meet, students are going to meet in video conferencing kinds of situations, team projects, and so on, with each other's universities. And that's a different kind of partnering. And so, but another one to keep track of, because I think you're going to see more and more of this type of thing. And by the way, I have all these links at the in the document that I gave you, so you can get it from there. You also have this last kind of thing. I guess I don't have time to go through all this. You have a lot of certificate programs going on. These are big deals, by the way. You've got Open University at Penn State. Now, this is where the universities are actually getting into the whole business ed thing. General degrees, Penn State World University is becoming a big deal. UCLA, Kentucky Common, and there's hundreds of these kinds of things. You also have comprehensive degree programs from companies. Motorola University, AT&T Virtual Academy, and so on. And the Western Governors University, which didn't buy accreditation, and so they have to go out and they're still struggling to get it, but I think they'll get it. University of Phoenix down here. These are the kind of the traditional ones that are becoming big deals, okay? They aren't always as prestigious, some of the ones above. I'm not gonna have time to go into this too much, but accreditation is still an issue. I think in terms of the corporate logos and the prestige schools, it's less of an issue as long as you have a logo, but for other operations, it is a bigger deal. I think the ABS-CSB is shooting itself in the foot. I think they are, since they're run by deans, and again, Chuck will talk to this more, but since they're run by deans, he more, knows more deans than he ever wants to meet, know in the future. But I kind of think the deans are kind of guarding the henhouse. And I think they're just going to find other ways around it. You also have these other groups that popped up. Now, the ACSB does have government sanction. The other group, like the ACBSB, I did a program for them not long ago, they're still recognized as an accrediting agency, but not quite with the same clout backing as the other. We have a new one here. It's called the Association for Online Excellence, and that is kind of a, you can talk about it maybe, Chuck, too. I don't know if you know about this, but it's a kind of an upstart accrediting agency for online programs. What impressed me, I think, are the schools that are in it. You've got the University of Alabama, you've got the Alaska, Arizona State University West, Arkansas State. In other words, you can go down here and you can find these universities that are British Columbia. So it seems to be important enough for those universities to seek accreditation from this upstart thing. And so next thing I want to explain. What?
G Capital.
What's he talking about? Huh?
Or. Spell that. Okay, thanks.
By Brittany? What's this about? Actually, I set him up for this. I'm going to talk about now, just in closing, and I don't have much time. I'm going to talk about in closing what I think is going to be the biggest deal in the future of 21st century education. It's down here. Now let's just go up and up. Crystal ball look to the future. And it's called, I want you to notice I'm relating Columbia University's Fathom with Be Vocal. Let's first of all go to Be Vocal. I just set him up as if he was talking to Be Vocal, okay? Actually, it's just an 800 number. You can call it on a cell phone, like he could now, just dial the 800 number. This doesn't take a computer. Doesn't take a computer. And what it is here is, he said Britney Spears, but it sounds like a woman, but it's not a woman. This is a virtual woman. Let's just demo it, and then you can see a little bit more about what it's going to be. Let's go ahead. What he just did is a stock quote. Let's just see what you can do with a stock quote. I got an old, slow laptop. I apologize for that.
Which service would you like?
Stock quotes.
Be Vocal stock quotes. All quotes are delayed by 20 minutes. Say the name of a company or index.
Cisco Systems.
Cisco Systems closed at 59.78 today, up 4.15 on a volume of about 51.33 million shares. Say more details or name a company or index.
More details.
Bid is 59.15. Ask is 60. Today's low is 57. Its high is 62. The 52-week low is 25. Its high is 82. Say the name of another company or index.
Goodbye.
If you wanted to at that point, you could also say spell that. And you get a spelling. Let's do one more here just to give you a little more, the same flavor of this. Let's do driving instructions. You can use this. Just dial that 800 number. You register for free. It's a free service.
Which service would you like?
Driving directions.
Be Vocal driving directions. Okay. I need to get your starting point. Say a city in California.
Santa Clara.
Santa Clara, California. Is this correct?
Yes.
Please say a street name in Santa Clara.
Walsh Avenue.
Walsh Avenue. Is this correct?
Yes.
Say the street number or say, I don't know it.
982.
I need to confirm the address with you. 982 Walsh Avenue, Santa Clara. Is this correct?
Yes.
Now I need to get your destination. Say a city in California.
Menlo Park.
Menlo Park, California. Is this correct?
Yes.
Say the street number or say I don't know it.
1500.
1500 San Antonio Street, Menlo Park. Is this correct?
Yes.
Just a minute while I look up those driving directions for you. Did you know that VVocal also provides real-time traffic reports, weather, and travel information? Please visit www.vvocal.com for more information regarding our services. All right, I have those driving directions. Would you like me to read them or email them?
Read.
Estimated driving time is 30 minutes to drive this 15.9-mile route. There are 6 steps total. Step 1. Start out going north on Lafayette Street by turning right. Go 0.3 miles. To go to the next step, say next or say help.
Next.
Step 2.
You get the gist. This is not a person. This is a person that is bringing up things from a database. And it's speaking to you. The database is updated daily. They have things for stock quotes here daily, weather. They also have, I don't think I put it in, traffic. They can actually tell you about traffic congestion. Pretty much they're confined to California. The plan is to go nationwide with this. See, you got a database. Is Fathom on the similar? You've got a database right now that is weather, flight information, driving directions, and so on. But how about Fathom? Smithsonian, British Library, all this, and you've got a woman that's going to come in there and is going to tell you about whatever you've asked about to know from that database. On top of that, what can that woman do? She recognizes your voice. You aren't on a keyboard with her. She's listening to you. Now, right now, they have only a certain limited set of commands. But if one of the commands includes spell that, you'll let her up and she will spell whatever you ask to spell and she'll move right on. And so I just view this as the phenomenal training and I think in some cases education of the future. Where you can just dial up and find out about anything you want to know. I'm going to tell you about one more thing in my wrap-up at the end of the day. Where we're maybe going to be able to inject knowledge in your veins, but we'll save that for the end, okay? With that, what I'm going to do is, come on up, Chuck, let's transfer your computer. I'm going to turn this over to Chuck. We'll take you back to the real world here. Although this is real world, you might want to try this on your own, the 800 number, just to see what it's like, okay? Now we go to